You're listening to a Castaway Media podcast. Find more great shows at castaway.media or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/castawaypodcasts.
Welcome to the Retro Asylum.
Hi guys, this is Steve, and you're listening to the latest episode of the Retro Asylum, the UK's number one award-winning podcast show. Joining me today is the one and only Mads. Mads, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, thanks, Steve. How about you?
Not too bad. I was pausing there because I was trying to think of like a cool way of saying, you know, our favourite Dane or something, and then I thought I might get the wrong country here or screw it up. That's what the pause was. It wasn't that I've forgotten your name. I hadn't forgotten your name.
Yeah, sure.
I was trying to think of something witty to go in the gap, and then nothing came. So, but it's been a long day.
It has. And you've been at work as well.
I have been at work. I've done an 11-hour day. It's my first day back in work, which has been rubbish. But, you know, it's work, isn't it? It's what you've got to do to pay the bills.
Yeah, exactly. I've been back for a week now, full week. So, yeah, it just has to be done.
Oh, man. And, so let's explain what we're doing today, which is our very first live play episode. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about a specific game, going into a bit of detail about it, some facts about the game, and a general bit of chit-chat. But what we're also going to try and do is actually play the game. So we're going to go online, play together, record us actually playing and talking while we play the game, and then after that, we'll actually put a link up and be able to upload what we've actually played up to YouTube, so the listeners can go and have a look at us playing online and fighting with each other.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great idea. And just to make sure that our listeners understand this, we do normally play the game every time we do record something. It's just that this time we're actually going to be recording while we're playing it, so you can see that as well.
Yeah, well, we've discovered, thanks to Matt, who's unfortunately not here tonight, but Matt has showed us this Amiga Live program. Which works hand in hand with FSUAE, which is the Amiga emulator on PC and Mac, and that has been brilliant, hasn't it? Because that, like, just basically, you just pick a game from the list, links you up online, you find a server, and you can both log into any multiplayer Amiga game.
Yeah, that's a great piece of kit, and it's so easy to use, actually. I mean, there's a huge list of multiplayer games. You can just click any one. It'll download the ROMs and the ADF files. And, of course, that's all legal. And FSUAE and connect the network layer for you as well. So everything just works. You don't have to worry about setting up tunneling through firewalls or anything like that. Everything just works.
Well, it almost works better than standalone FSUAE, doesn't it? Because it does. Everything
it's just easier, yeah. It configures everything for you, so you can even use it for just playing these games in single-player mode if you want.
Yeah. Do you know what? I was thinking about it the day after we had our first go on it, and it blows my mind how they've programmed that to work. How have they made the one game think that it's two games on two systems and sync them together so that, you know, your computer thinks it's one game and my computer thinks it's one game. And
I'm pretty sure the whole synchronization thing must have been quite tough to do.
It's so impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And the latency is actually very, very small when we've been playing it. We've been playing it on a UK-based server, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And even though I'm here in Denmark, it didn't have any problems controlling the game. So.
Well, I offered politely and kindly to be the host of the server on my end, yep. So that I would have absolutely no lag when I play.
Yeah. That was so nice of you, Steve.
I'm a kind heart. I'm a charitable guy. But to be honest, it didn't really help. But we'll go into that a bit later.
Yeah, let's do.
So all my practice runs so far, I've not turned out well. But anyway, so the game we're going to be talking about a little bit later on is Supercars 2. So yeah, so we'll get to that in a little while. But before that, should we do a little bit of news?
Yeah, let's. Do you want to start or should I?
I've just been talking endlessly, Mads, so
Let me just jump in here then. So I've picked a couple of news items that I thought was interesting in the past week or so. So the first one is that the future was 8-bit. You probably know those guys because they did the, what's it called, SD2IIC or something like that, the Commodore 64 SD card reader that looks like a 1541 disk card.
Oh, yeah.
Those are excellent. I have one of those, my Commodore 64s, and it works like a charm. And they are actually working on a DivMMC cartridge for loading cards for Aesthetic Spectrum on a from SD cards as well. So they are working on a solution that should work on all Spectrum models. It detects which Spectrum it's been plugged into, and there's no you don't have to mod your Spectrum in any way. It just works all the time, and it's nicely packed into a bit of plastic, and it's got that it's got the Kempston interface as well, I think. I'm not sure, but it looks to be a great SD card solution for your Speccy. So I'm definitely looking forward to these being released here. In it's actually supposed to be released in a couple of months. Just so I'm going to be buying one of those for my Speccy, so I can start playing on the real hardware.
So does this plug in the back of the Spectrum?
Yeah, it does. It does.
Because if you don't remember that anything that plugs into the back of the Spectrum falls out. But I'm only talking about the 48K Spectrum.
Okay. That's the model I have.
Yeah. So you'll get loads of use out of it. You'll get, you know, at least halfway through loading the game before it falls out the back.
And, well, thanks, Steve. I was looking forward to this until you destroyed it all.
No, I'm sure it'll be fine. I think it used to be like a bit of rubber band or something to like make sure it stayed in. Isn't that what they used to do on the old Spectrums?
I'm sure they did. I know very little about the Spectrums.
Okay. But no, that sounds like a nice bit of kit.
Yeah, I mean, they do really good stuff there at the Future Was 8-Bit, so I'm looking forward to this.
Awesome. We'll have to put a link to their site up in the show notes. People can have a nose.
Yeah, we have to. So the next part of news I have is, I think it was something Paul told us about, that the NES Classic, the Mini, has been hacked now. So there's a Russian team and a Japanese team that's done a hack so that it can get more games on it. But actually, right now, the video that I've been watching on YouTube just only has 60 games on it. So if that's because of limitations on the actual internal storage that's on there right now, or what, I don't know. But probably is. So somebody is also right now working on getting an SD card reader to work with the hack so you can put more games on it. So, of course, it would only be a matter of time before they actually hacked this little box and got it playing more ROMs. So it's going to be interesting to see how Nintendo is going to respond to this.
Oh, they won't be happy. They're never happy. But I love it. This the hacking community at large. You just knew. Even when they said it's got no Wi-Fi, it's got no Bluetooth, it's got nothing. You know, it's unhackable. It's going to have 30 games and that's it. And I was like, no, someone will work out how to do it.
Yeah, it's impressive. I don't know how these guys do it, but they always find a way in.
Well, I watched a little bit of a little clip about it today, and it's something to do. They do it through the USB connection, don't they? And I think you download the image from the NES Classic mm-hmm. onto your computer, and then you basically there's a program to hack that, and you have to upload your ROMs and your graphic art for all, you know, for the interface.
Yeah.
And then you flash it back.
Okay, so they found a way to flash it. Okay.
Yeah.
So that would probably explain why they've only put 60 games on it right now, because they haven't added any extra storage.
Yeah. And yeah. The thing is, I mean, there is a chance of you bricking it by doing this.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's only £800 to buy another one. So,
but is it actually a non-intrusive hack then? Can you do it without actually having to solder stuff onto your board or?
Oh, yeah. It's all done through the USB.
Wow, that's impressive, actually.
Yeah. So there's no screwdrivers, no nothing.
Okay, neat.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I've got some little bits of news. I don't know if you've seen today, there's a new video. The last couple of days, there's a new video of the Speccy Vega Plus handheld come out.
No, I haven't seen.
So, yeah, they've got them all lined up on a table. There's like six of them playing different games.
Yeah.
I'm just still not convinced. It looks really small. And these videos they keep releasing are always 480p.
Okay.
I don't know why. Hmm. You're like a big company making, you know, even the Speccy handheld is more than 480p, I think. Do you know? And it's like every video they've put out so far is in low resolution on YouTube, and I'm like, why have you not got like a 1080p video, you know, showing it off in all its glory?
You think they're afraid of people spotting some details?
Maybe they just want it to look, you know, a little bit blurry until people get their hands on it. I don't know. I mean, that's not, could be any reason. And I also noticed on the video clip, there's one of the games is Horace and the Spiders, which is one of the Speccy games.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but it looks like there's all corruption written underneath the letters on the title screen of Horus and the Spiders. That might be part of the graphics. It might be spider webs or something. It's hard to tell on 480p video.
Okay.
But yeah, I couldn't tell. It's like, is that game like corrupt? Is it playing back badly, or you know, is it supposed to look like that?
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see when they finally release it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll hold fire until I've actually had a go on one, but
yeah,
it looks small and it looks just doesn't. I don't know, something doesn't feel quite right. But like I say, let's hang fire. Let's see. It might be great. And if any of our listeners actually have kickstarted it or supported it and get one, you know, definitely get in touch and let us know. Send us a clip maybe, and we can have a look at it. So I watched the Viva Amiga documentary, which came out this week.
Oh yeah, was it any good?
Yeah, it was. This is only from my point of view. Once again, this is not the Retro Asylum as a whole's view. But I found it a little bit disappointing, a little bit. And the reason I'd say that was it's not very long. Well, I say not very long. It's an hour and 2 minutes long.
Okay.
And for me, it's kind of a lot of stuff that I've seen before. So the interviews for me were very, very similar to the stuff that I saw in the Amiga years, Bedroom to Billions.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also, once again, or even more so, very US-centric.
Okay.
So very, very American-focused. So it went on about its graphics capabilities that it came out with, and the fact that they had the video toaster where they could do video Genlock effects, and that, you know, some musicians were using it and stuff. And, you know, they did tend to speak about how great it was as a games machine, but they didn't show many games at all. There was no mention of British publishers. There was no mention of European publishers. There was no demonstrations of anything that, like, you know, was huge over here.
Okay, that's a bit that's a bit the same thing I thought when I watched the From Bedroom to Billions, actually, the Amiga years.
Yeah.
It was very US-centric, and it spent a lot of time talking about the machine and how that came about, but not that much time on the actual games and the UK scene.
Yeah, I just think, it's interesting there, because it was huge over here. It was, in fact, it's really where it had its full lifeblood was the UK and Europe and Germany and, you know, in that part and parts of Europe. And, like, you know, it's crazy that these documentaries have really tended to focus on how it was built and the chips that went into it and how it went up against Apple and it went up against Atari and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but it is an interesting story to tell. I mean, how it all came about, and there are all these power struggles between the different firms and all that. That is a good story to tell. The problem is that people like us, we've heard that story, we've read that story, we've even seen that story in documentaries a couple of times now.
Yeah.
So we're not that interested in that part anymore.
Well, we know it, don't we? We do.
Yeah, exactly.
We know it. Yeah, yeah. And that's, like you say, I'm interested in the other part of it. I'm interested in it from my point of view.
Yeah,
I suppose I want to know about the demo scene and the music scene in the UK and Europe, and I want to, you know, all the games that I remember playing as a kid, and
interviews with all the developers.
Bitmap Brothers and Psygnosis and, you know, Core Design. I want to see someone interviewing all those guys and really get into the nitty gritty of that side of it.
Me too.
And the Bedrooms to Billions does touch on some of that. You know, don't get me wrong, they do feature more than this Viva Amiga documentary do, but I just want a bit more, you know, more of a focus on that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the piracy scene. Come on. Everyone pirated games. Let's talk about that.
I didn't. I never pirated anything.
Did you not have any games? That's such a shame, Mads. No.
Nah, what we really want is somebody like Mark Hardesty doing a documentary instead, like taking what he did with the Gremlin book into a documentary. That would be great.
Yeah. Someone to have that passion and that perspective.
Exactly.
Will be brilliant. Yeah.
And wanting to go in depth with everything. I mean, he has so much attention to detail in his work. So something like that would be great. But of course, it would also be a 10-hour movie. That would be a bit too long, I guess.
Fine with that. I'll have it on like a TV series. We'll have it, you know, 10 episodes. That's fine. Put it on Netflix. I'll binge watch it. But yeah, I totally agree. I mean, there's a new one coming out from the UK, called Button Bashers.
Yeah.
Where I think the guys from Manchester, the guys who are making it, and they've got like a really sort of more gritty UK arcades, 8-bit computers and 16-bit stuff going on, and really does look like it's not really paying any attention to the US at all.
Yeah.
And it looks interesting, so that, you know, that's coming up on the horizon. I think that'll be out sometime this year.
Oh, I'll look forward to that.
Yeah. So that'll be yeah, more what we're looking for, I think. So have you got any more news, Mads?
Yeah, actually, I got one more thing. It was something Matt mentioned to us. Sam's Journey, the new C64 game that what they call Knights of Bytes are working on. There's a new 2-minute gameplay video released, and it looks absolutely gorgeous. You really have to check that out. You can go to Indie Retro News and find it there. It's one of the top stories right now while we're recording this. Yeah. And it looks stunning. It's so beautiful. It doesn't look... It looks a bit unreal, to be honest. It looks like something I've never seen my C64 do before, but it looks like an NES game or something like that. It's so, well, smooth, nice,
yeah, man.
Lots of color as well. So all what about, did you think about it?
All about Sam Dyer and his trip to work.
yeah, exactly.
No, I've seen it, and it looks good. It looks really good. I mean, yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I thought NES when I looked at it. When you hear the soundtrack to it and the sound effects, it's obviously... Sid Chip doing that.
Yeah.
It's blatant. But graphically, it did look a bit NES. But then again, Mayhem in Monsterland is close to that kind of level of graphics on the C64. So maybe it is possible.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I've actually never played that myself. I had abandoned my C64 when that came around. I was playing on my Amiga. So I've actually never tried that. I'll have to try that soon.
Yeah, you should definitely go back and have a look at that, because that's... Really, that's one of the few games that really, really pushed, seemed to push the C64 to its limits.
Yeah, but that was quite late in the C64's lifespan, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, right towards the very end.
Okay.
But, I mean, one of the things I said to you guys on our chat the other day was I'm not convinced that this Sam's Journey isn't using an emulator with some of the settings cranked up.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe it's got a couple of megabytes of memory rather than the 64K or... processors, but I don't know what's going on there.
I really hope it just work on the old C64, because to get the real experience, I want to be playing it on my old C64 using my SIP stick. So,
yeah, it'd be brilliant to get tape of or a cartridge of it.
Yeah, yeah.
To actually buy it like that, that would be class. If it is possible to do that with it, like.
Yeah, that'd be great. Mm. But we have to check out whether they're actually going to do these physical releases as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interest in that game, so you never know, because it's, you know, it does look really good. So, other news, BlazTab Plus, my BlazTab Plus turned up. I think I mentioned that last time we were on, but I've had a good play with it since, and I love it. It's great. I haven't sold it.
Well, that's a big surprise.
Yeah, that's like my, you know, that's the biggest endorsement I can give it, is that it's so still here.
If Steve hasn't sold a product after owning it for 14 days, it's very, very good.
Yeah. But I'm really liking it, because... I think I told you a while back I'd tried to get myself another JXD, and I'd sort of chased Matt for one for a little bit, and you know, they stopped selling them everywhere now. Mm. And I'd ended up with the original Blaze Tab.
Yes.
Which I liked, but it was a bit clunky. I didn't like the big hand grips on the sides of it and stuff. It was a bit, just like, wasn't convinced by it. And I really wanted a JXD, and then, like I say, Funtstock come out with this new one, this Blaze Tab Plus, which looks very similar to the JXD. It's a sort of similar form factor. It looks like almost like a Game Gear or a Lynx. Like,
so how big is the screen on that one?
7 inches, I think it is.
How much?
Maybe 7, maybe.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I think it's 7 inch from end to end, yeah.
Hmm.
At least I hope it is. Someone's been telling me how big 7 inches is. but yeah. It's a nice bit of kit. It's like it's really nicely well built. The D-pad on it's not too spongy.
Yeah.
It's got two analog sticks, which I think click, but I'm not too sure. The screen's nice. It's nicer than the previous Blaze Tab for me.
Okay.
It's got a better viewing angle, so if you move it about, you can still get a really nice view of the picture. And so far, everything I played on it's run absolutely fine, up to practicing supercars on the Amiga emulator on it.
Okay. Yeah, you did need some practice.
I did need some practice, you know. But we will see, Mads, when we get to this live play in a bit. Who,
yes, we will.
Who is the true supercars player?
Yeah. But speaking about spongy D-pads, I've got myself a new gaming PC for my living room as well. So I've just entered the PC gaming world again. I've had a PC for a long time, but now I've bought myself a new modern PC with a big GeForce graphics card and all that you need to play the modern games.
Yeah.
And of course, the first thing I played on it was some Amiga CD32 games on my big screen in the living room.
Using it properly.
Yeah, of course. And that works brilliantly. I've been playing some old DOS games as well, using DOSBox. And of course, my kids have been using it to play Sims 4 all the time. So when I can actually get some time in front of it, I've been playing a lot of old games on that. And I look forward to playing more in my living room, do some actual emulation, which I don't do that often. You know, I like my original hardware, but I think I'm going to start doing a bit of more of diving into the emulation scene. So, but spongy D-pads, I mean, I've been playing on a Xbox 360 controller, and I forgot how bad the D-pad is on that controller. So I'll have to see if I can't pair up a PS3 controller instead, because that works a lot better for the retro games.
Yeah, I mean, I've recently got an Xbox One S, and the D-pad's all right on my One S controller, but I'm not too sure on the Xbox One, on the, was it, which Xbox, the 360?
Yeah. Yeah, the 360 was really, really bad, the D-pad, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah.
I think the PS3 is a lot better, but actually, you're right, I could just try an Xbox One controller, of course.
Yeah, I quite like mine. It's quite clicky on my Xbox One controller, but it's quite nice as well.
Yeah. I'll have to dive into that. But let's go to some facts about the game we're actually going to be playing, right?
Let's do that, then.
So, Supercars 2. As most people probably know, it's published by Gremlin. It says Gremlin everywhere when you're driving around in it, and in the intro as well. But it was developed by Magnetic Fields. Actually, it was developed by Sean Southern and Andrew Morris. They were the guys who did it. And Sean Southern is the guy you probably know, and Andrew Morris from games like Kickstart or Trailblazer, or my favorite version of Kickstart is Kickstart 2. And of course, in later years, they did all of the Supercars and Lotus games and did a lot of great work. I'm sure you know their work on the 8 and 16-bit systems, don't you, Steve?
Yeah, I love the stuff that they've done in the past. But I think once they got into the 16-bit, they really started to excel themselves.
Yes. They loved their racing games, and they did the best racing games for the Amiga, if you ask me, and probably two of the best racing games for the 16-bit platforms, in my opinion. And that would be Supercars, both 1 and 2, and then Lotus 2 for my money.
That's three games, that much. That's three.
Oh yeah, but that was just thinking about the Supercar series and the Lotus series. Sorry.
I'm just teasing.
But actually, Sean and Andrew, they started a company called Mr. Chip Software way back in 1982, working primarily on the Commodore 64. So that was when they started doing the kickstarts and Trailblazer. And then in 1988, they changed the name of the company to Magnetic Fields, and under that name, they released, as I said, some of the best racing games ever made, and that would be Supercars and Lotus. But they did some other games as well. Actually, they did a very well-received platform as well called Kid Chaos, released for CD32, for example. I've never tried that one myself. Have you played that, Steve?
No. Although the name totally rings a bell. Didn't they do a rally game as well?
They did the Mobile One Rally Championship and International Rally Championship and Network Q Rack Rally Chip as well. Okay. Rally Championship is what I'm trying to say.
Well, what did you think of, before we just dive into Supercars 2, what did you think of Supercars 1?
Well, I love Supercars 1. Actually, I somewhat prefer Supercars 1 as a single-player game because, of course, Supercars 1 only has single-player capabilities. It doesn't have multiplayer at all. But I like that in Supercars 1 you have less weapons. You can, as I remember it, you can only have one front-facing and one rear-facing missile, and that's all you can have for one race. So it feels like when you win over the computer opponents, you actually win because you're the better racer, not because you got lucky and shot the one in the lead just before the race ended. Or more importantly, when you lose, it feels like you lost because you were a bad racer, not because you accidentally got shot 20 times. And I didn't like that about Supercars 2, that one aspect. But I love Supercars 2 as a multiplayer game. And it is, in fact, as a racing game, technically a bit better than Supercar 1 as well.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to think I prefer Supercars 2 as well. But I think it's the one I played the most because I used to play with my mate down the road, Paul, and we anything that was multiplayer, that was the games we booted up all the time.
Yeah.
So even though we both had Supercars 1, if we went round, it'd be Supercars 2 that we'd be playing.
Yeah, of course, when you're playing with a mate, Supercars 2 is the best. But as a single-player game, I still prefer the first one, actually.
Yeah. But I think it also shows as well, because once we sort of got this Amiga Live system up and running, and this was the first game we played, wasn't it, having a game of Supercars 2 together?
Yeah.
And it was just fun. It was just, I'd just forgotten just how much fun having a multiplayer with your mates is.
And it's just fun from the get-go with Supercars. It's so easy to just pick up and play.
Yeah. Well, I think even on the very first go, we both basically shot each other immediately.
Yep.
The first game. Yeah, yeah. It was the first thing I remembered was fire me missiles. And so we both just like literally on our practice run when we first had a go, just he was in front of me, I was behind him, and it's like the horn went to start the game and we just both launched missiles and both blew up.
And that's just great. We've been playing for 5 seconds and we were both roaring with laughter. So how you're supposed to be playing multiplayer games.
Yeah. I think one of the nice things about it, though, is when we've been playing it, is when you're playing on the split screen, you can see when the other player tries to shoot you from their screen. You're keeping an eye on both. And it's like, oh, he's two cars ahead of me, but we're both on the straight and he's fired backwards missiles. So it's
you definitely have to use that, and especially on the long straights, you have to watch where on the road the back facing missile is coming, so you can avoid it. That's just part of the fun, that it's split screen and you can't really hide what you're doing.
It's an interesting game. I mean, it's not super fast, it really isn't, but it doesn't need to be. And I think the speed, well, I say it's not super fast. On one point, you had three bloody engines.
Yep, and then it was actually super fast.
It was ridiculous.
It was actually hard to control.
It was insane. You literally, I'm sure you lapped me. It was it was insane how fast you were flying around that track. But it's really, what I'm trying to say is it's well paced.
Yeah.
Because the tracks can be quite tight and intricate in certain places, and then if you could just speed around those tracks, you just wouldn't be able to get around them. You wouldn't navigate them properly. You'd just bump into every single wall and every corner. And I feel like that they've paced it perfectly so that you know, if you get good at it, you can take those bends and you can time your jumps and, you know, you can get it right.
Yeah, and it feels very good when you get it right because, as you say, it is indeed possible. All the turns can be done in the early levels. You don't even have to brake. You just have to turn at the exact right time, and all the turns can be done without hitting the wall. And in the later levels, you just have to release your fire button and push it down again for a second while you're in the turn. And you'll do a handbrake turn instead. And when you actually get it, because you will run into the wall a lot of times, when you actually get these turns perfectly, it feels just right and feels so good. And it gives you an edge on the opponent.
It's just so satisfying, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's I mean, it's funny that we were talking about Rock and Roll Racing the other week. And for me, I prefer this. I prefer Supercars.
Yeah, me too.
I think the top-down perspective works better than the sort of pseudo 3D isometric.
Yeah, I really like Rock and Roll Racing, but for me, there is really no competition. I mean, it's Supercars 2 or perhaps the first Micro Machines, or no, the 96 version of Micro Machines. Those are the best top-down racers for my money.
I think just as an out-and-out racer, I think the mechanic is better in Supercars 2 than it is in the others, as well, specifically Rock and Roll Racing. I think it's more well thought out, better designed, and the control and mechanic of the game works better.
And the track design is so much more interesting.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, I like when there's jumps in certain parts of the track.
Yeah.
And there's tunnels in certain parts of the track, and they're not just there to make it look flashy. They are there to make it tricky.
Yep.
And they work. There's the amount of times that you'll be doing well in a race, and you'll come to like do a jump from one side to the other, and one of the either your mates who's playing against you or one of the computer cars will bump into you as you hit the apex of that jump, and you'll just fall in the gap.
So I actually even died once because I was driving on the straight under the jump, and one of the other guys, the computer-controlled cars, didn't make the jump, and his car landed on top of mine. You have to be careful of that as well. There's so many little details there that just makes this game a joy to play. But it's also quite infuriating when you don't get that jump and you're right behind your opponent.
Oh, God, yeah. If you just get it slightly wrong, even if you're just at an angle and you don't make it, you haven't jumped far enough.
Yep.
But
it's the kind of thing that keeps you at the edge of your seat, just with sweaty palms. I rediscovered while we played this. We played for, about an hour last night? Yeah. And I rediscovered the fact that when you're playing with a real joystick, an old Amiga joystick, I have this USB Amiga joystick, it hurts your hand after a while. So my hand was sweaty and it hurt, but I wanted to win, so I just had to endure through the pain.
That's what it takes to be a winner, Mads.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. So I was playing on a PS4 controller, and I will be playing in a moment on a PS4 controller. Are you going USB Competition Pro again?
Yeah, let's see how you do.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. And the other things when we're talking about the jumps as well, the tunnels, there's a couple of levels where the tunnels are quite long. Yeah. And they're tricky in a whole different way. Because if you go into that tunnel and you aren't exactly straight, you'll find yourself bouncing off each wall trying to straighten yourself up.
Yes.
So you come out. If you get it straight, perfect, great. I'll tell you another thing that absolutely used to it did kill me in the game, but it used to like totally freak me out when I used to play it with my mate, is that you'd go into the tunnel, your mate would be behind you, and as you're a quarter to halfway through that tunnel, you'd hear the noise of missiles being fired.
Yes.
And you're like, which part of the track has that happened on? Has it happened in the tunnel with me and I'm about to be shot? You know what I mean? It's like, and another thing it used to do that would crack me up as well is where the computer would place you back down after you'd been blown up.
Yes.
Like on occasion, like someone would leave a mine on the track.
Yes.
And a computer would place you on top of it.
Or place you on the train tracks in one of the levels, so you get hit by the train immediately.
Yeah.
That just happens.
Yeah. But that's sort of fun.
Going back to the tunnels, I love the way they control your view in this game, because you're always in the center. So when you're in the tunnel and you're swerving a bit to the left or to the right, you can see it, even though you're in the tunnel. You can see that your entire view is moving slightly to one of the sides. So you can actually adjust and make sure you don't hit the walls, even though you can't see your car. That's brilliantly done.
Oh yeah, it's so clever. And that, but it's once again, if there's other cars in the tunnel with you, it's still difficult. Because they'll bounce, you bump into them instead. You know what I mean? It's like, what's going on in that tunnel? Yeah, but absolute class game. And what do you think of the level design across the board? You know, the style of it.
I simply love the level design in this game. The levels are quite, the tracks are quite crazy, really, when you think about them as racing tracks. But as you said, there are jumps there and tunnels and all that kinds of stuff. But there are very few long straights. There are lots of turns, and you'll have to learn how to control your car perfectly through all of those, and for me it's brilliant. Sometimes the tracks have multiple ways to get through them, and you have to choose the right one depending on how many opponents you have in front of you or behind of you right now, and it doesn't get much better than this.
No, I think it's so well done. I mean, graphically it's slightly bland in a sense.
You think?
I don't mean in the design of the level at all. I just mean to look at it, just, you know, it's a grey road with a bit of track design around the sides and a bit of bushes and stuff. It's, you know, to look at.
Yeah, but there's still so many details. I mean, there are shadows under the cars while you jump over the gaps and
gradients.
There's
on
so
the
many
hill.
Little details there. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But I was going to say it's definitely sort of functionality over form, because it plays so well and everything's been built to enhance the racing experience as opposed to making it look dead flashy. You know, you've got your chicanes, you've got the gates that open and close on certain tracks, and you've got a time sort of, like, you can shoot through the gate if it opens in time. And you've got multiple routes you can take as well.
Yeah.
There's certain tracks where you can like veer off to the right and go around a different part of the bend.
Yeah.
Or you can go straight. You know, it's such a well-designed game.
Yeah, but you're probably right. The graphics are probably somewhat simple, but my rose-tinted glasses just won't let them be anything less than spectacular. So,
this
game was very,
you know,
well received back in the day as well. I mean, it's got scores in the 90s or high 80s most of the time, so people did love it back in the day as well.
Well, I mean, it's like you just said before, I would class this as probably my favorite Amiga top-down racer. Probably that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I can't. You know, there was other Skid Marks is very good.
Yes.
I used to love Badlands, actually. I actually played Badlands.
Well, I never played that one, actually.
That's a great one, but that's the whole tracks on screen at once.
Okay.
So, like a modern take, well, a modern, you know, back in the day, to take on Championship Sprint.
Oh, yeah, or Ivan Iron Man Stewart. Do you know that
yes.
one?
Yes.
That's
yeah,
a great version of a top-down racer where you see the entire track as well.
Yeah, so it's very, very similar to that vein. If you have a look, because it was an arcade conversion. It was originally an Atari arcade game.
Yeah, Badlands. Yeah, I'll look at that. Look at that.
It's good fun. I mean, that'll be another one for us to have a quick two-player on.
Yeah.
And have fun. But for me, like I say, I think Skid Marks, Micro Machines, Supercars 2, they're your three top down racers.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree.
That wasn't me stammering. That was me saying top down racer. But yeah, you know, and I mean, there was other notable games like that. I mean, I liked Nitro as well, which was the Psygnosis.
Yes,
if you played that. But it's not as good. It's a nice little fun racing game, but it is not as good or as well thought out as Supercars 2.
Definitely. I definitely agree there. It is a great game. It's a good racer, and it's a fun arcadey racer with all these weapons you have. So it's a edge of your seat, yelling at the top of your lungs kind of game.
Yeah.
And it's quite an arsenal you got, actually. I mean, we mostly use front and rear missiles, but there are homing missiles and this super missile as well, and you can lay down mines, and you can upgrade your car with armor and new engines and... actually buy nitros as well, so there's a lot to do in this game.
We couldn't quite work out how to use the other missiles, though, could we? Is it space bar? We'll have to figure it out.
I definitely remember doing it when I was younger, playing it, but no, where we were playing it this time, we didn't have the time to check the manual, or perhaps we just gotten so old so we can't really find the patience to do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll work it out in our race in a minute.
Yeah, we'll see.
But before we jump into the actual live play and we have an actual race for the first time on any podcast ever live, it's probably not true. the one part of Supercars 2 that kind of infuriates me is the questions between the levels.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my word. I mean, it's fun and it's funny. But the amount of times when we were practicing it, I just lose half my money.
Yep.
Because I don't know which question, because all of the answers are like fixed and none of them make any sense.
Yeah, it seems very, very random. I mean, totally you can't really do it right.
Yeah, I think it's just luck, isn't it? Totally pot luck. Yeah. And it can have an impact on your game because, like, you know, you can lose position in the race, you can lose points, you can lose money.
Yeah, I liked it when we played it the other day because you lost money and I got some money, so I got to buy new engine upgrades and you didn't get anything.
I know. It's a disgrace.
Fortunately, you can just turn those off when you play in multiplayer.
Yeah, I think for the purists, for the hardcore, if you just want to race.
Yeah, so let's do that when we race now.
Maybe we can turn them off, yeah. But right, okay, mate, so are you ready
for the first ever?
You ready for this? Okay,
yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the first ever live play, live race on a podcast. Me and Mads linking up live across the internet. I'm hosting again to try and give myself the edge. And we're going to have a race on Supercars 2. So here we go. And we'll come back and chat a little bit about it after we've had the race. You ready, Mads?
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Live play.
So you ready for the first race?
I'm ready for the first race.
I'm ready to show you why this is one of my favorite games.
Okay.
Damn it.
So hello and welcome to the first ever Retro Asylum live play. Me and Mads are currently on our first lap of Supercars 2.
And Steve has already shot me twice.
I've shot Mads twice. That's how I play. That's how I roll, Mads. Get used to it. So we're playing across the net with Amiga. What was it called? Amiga Live?
Amiga Live, yeah.
Which is pretty awesome.
Pretty good.
It is. It's really good. So we've got a split screen game on the go. Normal two player Supercars 2. I'm the red car. Mads is the green car. But it just works like you're playing with someone next to you. And obviously we're chatting live on Skype or something similar, whatever it's called.
Discord entry.
Discord, yes. However, the important news is I'm in fourth and Matt is in fifth.
Yeah, and that's no good, because we've been playing for hours and I've been in the lead all the time.
That's not true. This is the first time we've played it. This is the first ever race. No, it is true. Mads has been kicking my arse at this. However, it's this lap that counts, Mads. This is the official take.
This is the one being recorded, so yeah. I'm going to have to really take my time controlling it here.
I've used all my missiles up already. I've just dodged him. So the white guy, I don't mean the white guy, that sounds terrible. The white car.
You know, Steve,
oh, he's right behind me, shit.
Come on.
Oh, I've just blown Mads up. Reverse missiles. Straight into... I won.
You shot me three times and I didn't give you a single missile.
This is true. But Mads, for the first ever Retro Asylum live play, first race, I have won.
Live play.
Okay, and welcome back from the first ever live play. And as you will have just heard there, I have won the first ever Supercars 2 race.
Hang on.
Live, what?
So that was only the first race, right? And there were three races, I seem to recall, Steve.
Mads.
So who won the next two? Let's just see. You can check
it
out
on YouTube.
We'll
see you next time, folks. We'll see you next time on the Retro Asylum. This has been... okay, fine. Right. Oh, right. Okay, Mads won three races. No, two of the three races.
Yeah.
I've won one race. So we've put in the audio here. So you only just listened to the first race, which is what we're going to put in. But it was actually three races. You've just heard the first one. But if you want to hear the entire thing where Mads wins, then we're going to put the link up on YouTube and you can actually watch us race together and see the rest of the action. But yeah, well done, Mads. You've won.
Thanks. It was great fun, Steve.
Yeah, it was fun for you.
It was. I hope you had a bit of fun as well.
I had lots of fun on the first race. Hmm. Which I thought, that's it. I thought it was great on the first race. I've got this in the bag. I've got a grip on this. I think I'm just good at the first track. I think that's what it is. I'm just good at the first track, because you absolutely destroyed me on the second two, as people will see. But yeah, folks, if you want to go onto YouTube, there'll be a link with the show. So just have a look at the show notes for the link and you'll be able to watch and listen to us racing each other, and you get to watch Mads win race two and three.
Yeah, that was very, very satisfactory. I like that. I wonder who's going to win the next game, Steve.
It's going to be me.
Are you going to be picking the next one?
I don't mind who picks it, but it's going to be me, because I'm just going to edit the show so that I win. Okay.
Yeah.
So I win no matter what. Yeah, yeah. So, I'm going to edit the show and the audio and the video so that I win.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Let's see how that works for you. No, but I'd like to encourage our listeners to go pick up that Amiga Live, because we had so much fun playing this both today and last night. So it's easy to use, and it just works playing these network games. So join each other on the forums and find somebody to play with and try it out. It's great fun.
Well, I think the thing is, you know, hopefully we're going to be doing this as a little bit of a series, because, you know, it's quite easy to pick up a game and have a multiplayer game between us and have a chat about it and stuff. So this is something that we're going to be, you know, hopefully going forward with this year and doing some more shows about specific games. But if people can get involved with us and stuff, there's no reason not to say that we can't have a few games with you guys as well.
Exactly.
You know, you let us know that you're interested and involved, and we'll discuss what game and that, and we'll get you on the server and we can have some races with you guys as well. And, you know, it could go towards your gaming club as well, Mads.
Yeah,
it could all fit together.
We can see if we can do episodes on the game of the month or the game that we're playing right now sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, other things that we're looking at is potentially streaming live while we're doing it as well.
Yeah.
So you'll actually be able to watch it live as it happens. And we are also figuring out all the technology at the moment so that we hopefully have some commentary.
We did actually do one Twitch stream the other day when we tried testing this Amiga Live stuff out. So we will definitely be going live, but we need to figure out a few things first.
Yeah. We need to figure out how to stop Mads giving all my private details away on the Twitch.
For example, that would be a good idea, yes.
like you did in the practice run.
Well, yeah. I am only a computer science major, so I know nothing of all that.
Exactly. But yeah, I've enjoyed it, Mads. I think, you know, how do you feel about our first live play episode?
I think this has been great fun, and I look forward to do lots more of these.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going forward. We're going to do some more, and we'll get the other guys involved as well. And, yeah, it's going to be good.
And we're not only going to be playing Amiga games, of course. I mean, Amiga Live is one thing that we'll be using, but we're also going to be playing some Sega Mega Drive games, for example, using Kega Fusion. And we'll look into other emulators that have multiplayer capabilities as well. So it's not going to be all Amiga.
Yeah, I mean, Paul mentioned the other day, didn't he, some other one. I think it could have been like MAME-type stuff or something.
Yes, he mentioned that.
I can't remember what it was, but yeah, he knows of another one, so we can, you know, whatever systems we can get up and running and play online and have fun with, then we'll do them as well.
Exactly.
Cool. So should we round up, Mads, for the first episode?
Let's do. Do you have any shout-outs?
Yeah, I'll shout out to just all the other awesome retro gaming podcasts out there. Maximum Power Up, Tenpence Arcade, The Retro Hour, RGS. You?
Yeah. I'd like to add a few there, like the Amigos podcast, the guys from the States, still doing a great show, so check those guys out if you haven't already, and if you like the Amiga. And one thing I think for some reason, we never really mentioned these guys, the Retronauts. They have this, it's been running for 10, 11 years now, a very, very good podcast about retro gaming. So if you guys, your listeners, don't already know these guys, check out the Retronauts, retronauts.com, for example. You can find everything about them there.
I haven't really had a look at them, so I'll have a listen myself.
Oh, you never heard those guys?
No, I've heard of them. I just hadn't actually heard them. I haven't listened to the show,
They do a great show, but it's very... it's very US-centered, if you ask me, well, Japanese as well. They are very much into their Nintendo, so if you're not into your Nintendo, you'll probably skip some of the episodes. But they do cover other stuff as well. They do cover Sega stuff. I did listen to some Master System and Mega Drive episodes as well, but they're quite Nintendo-centered. But I do like my Nintendo, so I still do listen to them occasionally.
Well, it's nice to get a different flavor anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I've forgotten one podcast as well before we go. The Retro Gaming Roundup. Have a listen to Dinosaur Pie, which is Simon Butler that we had on last week.
Yes.
He's got his own segment on the Retro Gaming Roundup, and their podcasts are only about 8 hours long, and that is not a joke. That is not a joke. The last episode is 7 hours, 40 minutes.
Okay.
So if you want something to get you through the entire week when you're driving and out to work, have a listen to them as well.
Hmm.
Great stuff. Okay, mate, should we call it a day?
Yeah, let's do. Thanks for playing,
okay, guys,
Steve.
No worries. Thanks for beating me, you bastard. we'll see you next time, guys. Take it easy.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
This was a Castaway Media production. Find more great podcasts on our network. Visit castaway.media.